السلام عليكم. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. So as you have just heard, the subject of our program tonight is Al-Hajj wal-Umrah fi Kitabi wa Sunnah, which is basically Hajj and Umrah in Quran and in the Sunnah of our beloved Prophet and his household, alayhimus salam. There are two parts to this program tonight, inshallah. The main part is going to be this, discussing what Quran and Hadith have to say about Hajj and Umrah. And that is the second part, actually, which is the main part. This first part here, I would like to just show you a few pictures and video clips, just so that those who have never been for Hajj or Umrah, when we speak about the different aspects of Hajj, just so we are all on the same page, I think it'll be helpful if you have a visual. So before I proceed, I'm just a little curious to know, are there any individuals here who are planning to go for Hajj this year? Anyone going? MashaAllah. Okay. We have two brothers here. Is it the first time for either one of you?
First time and third time.
Okay. MashaAllah. Well, there may be some as well here who have never been for Hajj or Umrah, and inshallah Allah grant us all opportunities to do so. So just so we are all on the same page, and before I do this as well, I just want to also mention what is unique about our program tonight. Most of the groups that go for Hajj, they normally have such sessions to educate the mu'mineen and mu'minat who are about to set out as pilgrims. But those sessions usually focus on the ahkam and the masail of Hajj, the laws. And I'm sure those going for Hajj have attended such a program. Or it involves, you know, how to be prepared, the physical preparation aspect of it. Of late, there has been a lot of interest on the philosophy and the spiritual aspects of Hajj. So there's a lot of resources on the internet now as well, lectures and PowerPoint slides and so on the different aspects of Hajj and their philosophy and what's the spiritual significance of doing tawaf and so on. What we are doing tonight is actually something different from all of this. What we are talking about is the etiquette of how to do these different aspects and the reward for them, the adab and the thawab of these different aspects, purely from a Quran and Hadith perspective. So a large part of it is just going to be Hadith, 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 but inshallah it will be very useful, I hope, and even for those who have been for Hajj, it will hopefully build a zeal and inspiration in us to go again and again. So I'll start with some of the pictures here. For those who... I'm not sure if this is clear enough or if we need to... Can you see that? If the lighting is an issue, do just mention it. But I have actually a pointer here that might help a little bit. So what you have here is the Masjidul Haram, the most sacred mosque in Islam. And the cube right in the middle here, of course, is the Kaaba. And what you see as sand around it or grains of sand, those are people. And there is a line that comes out of the mosque here, this line here. And this is what we will refer to as Safa and Marwa. So there are two small hillocks or mountains, if you like. You have Safa there, under that dome there, and you have Marwa there. And so a major part of the Umrah and Hajj is after doing tawaf around the Kaaba, you would actually walk seven times, and somewhere in the midpoint here, you would actually, for men, you would run or jog a little bit, which is called Harwala, and that happens somewhere in between here. So for this picture, I just wanted to point out Safa and Marwa as being on this side here of the Kaaba. And we shall see later on Maqam Ibrahim would be somewhere there between the Kaaba and the Safa Marwa that comes out from there. Then on this picture here, unfortunately, I couldn't find an English version of this and also couldn't find the time to replace it with English words here. But this is the picture of the Kaaba itself. And we shall see some video clips as well. But essentially, for those who have never been for Hajj Umrah and are not familiar with the terms at all, I just want to point out that where you have the door of the Kaaba, okay, I could use this to magnify. Perfect. Excellent. All right. Technical help, always welcome. So where you have the door of the Kaaba, at the corner here, this little circle, that's where you have Hajar al-Aswad, which is literally translated as the black stone. And that stone is said to have come from paradise with Nabi Adam alayhi salam. And it is that spot right there between the Hajar al-Aswad and the door of the Kaaba, that is the most sacred spot on earth, right? So on the planet, the most sacred land would be Mecca. Within Mecca would be Masjid al-Haram. Within Masjid al-Haram would be the area around the Kaaba. And then that place there between the Hajar al-Aswad and the door. And in fact, this area here is called Hatim, which we shall see. Hatim literally means that which is crushed or smashed, because that's where you get your ribs crushed if you are up for it. And we shall see this from Hadith as well. That's actually why it's called Hatim, because that's where you get the most rush. And to be able to pray there is you know, significant, but it's very, very unlikely you'll be able to do that in Hajj. Okay. And then this structure outside separate here is called Maqam Ibrahim, and it houses a rock that bears the footprints of Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam, who built the Kaaba, or according to some, Nabi Adam built it, and then it sort of was neglected, broke down, and Ibrahim alayhi salam rebuilt it. And as he was building and standing on that rock or inviting people to Hajj, that rock is said to have softened for him and left his footprints on it. And this Maqam Ibrahim originally was very close to the Kaaba, touching the Kaaba, but it has been moved away progressively over time because of the crowd of pilgrims. Then you have a little semicircle here on this side of the Kaaba, which is called the Hijr Ismail. Okay? And when you do tawaf around the Kaaba, you actually don't go into the Hijr Ismail. You go around it from the outside like that, and then you go around that. Okay? So that semicircle is called Hijr Ismail. And when Nabi Ibrahim first built the Kaaba, it wasn't as big a structure. And Nabi Ismail and his mother Hajar used to actually live there in a tent. And some of the hadith or riwayat say that Nabi Ismail alayhi salam and his mother are actually buried there, in that ark in there. And there are some riwayats to say that many prophets have been buried there. Some say 1,000 prophets have been buried within the vicinity of the Kaaba. Some say 70 and so on. Okay, what else do I want to show you? The word Kaaba itself means a cube, and the English word cube may have come from the Arabic Kaaba, actually. Each one of these corners has a name, and in Arabic, a corner is called a rukn. So in Hadith, you will find a lot of mention of these rukns or arkan. It's important to know their names if you want to sort of understand the significance. When you hear the word rukn without saying what rukn it is, then it's referring to the main rukn here, which houses the Hajar al-Aswad. And that's why some people call this rukn al-Hajar, or they call it rukn al-Aswad, because that's where the Hajar al-Aswad is. Okay. The next most important corner of the Kaaba in significance would be this one here, on this side. And this is the rukn al-Yamani. Okay. So from Hajar al-Aswad, if you were to go clockwise, then the first corner would be Rukn al-Yamani. And this one here, diagonally opposite to the Hajar al-Aswad, would be the Rukn al-Gharbi. And the one here closest to the door of the Kaaba on the other side of Hajar al-Aswad, where the Hijr Ismail starts, is called the Rukn al-Shami. Okay? And it goes these names as well, because in the olden days, when Mecca was just a valley surrounded by mountains, there were various passes through which caravans came in. So the caravans that came from Syria came in from this side, down the valley into where the Kaaba was, and that was therefore called the Shami corner, the corner from Sham, right? And then Gharbi would be the western side, so the caravans from the west came from there, and then Al-Yamani would have been those from Yemen, okay? When you do the tawaf of the Kaaba, it is always anti-clockwise. So this line that comes out from here is where you basically start your tawaf, and you go around, or what we call circumambulate. You do the tawaf going around like that 7 times. You never do tawaf clockwise, which is not hard to figure out, because with the rush and the crowd, you'll never be able to go the other way around. So I have mentioned some technical terms there. This line now has been removed by the Saudi government. They had put a line like this before on the marble so you could tell where to start. But that was creating some problems, which we shall talk about later on. And now the line, I believe, is not there anymore. So in terms of technical terms, Rukn al-Yamani, Rukn al-Hajar, these two we'll mention time and again. Hatim, we said, was this area here. We might talk about an area of the Kaaba called Multazim and Mustajar. Multazim and Mustajar are actually on this wall here, which is the wall facing the door of the Kaaba, the other side, right opposite the door of the Kaaba. When Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam had built the Kaaba, he had actually built 2 doors to the structure. There was an eastern door and a western door. And so there was a door facing this door on that side. But then with time, by the time, even before Islam, during the time of Jahiliyyah, when the Quraysh were maintaining the Kaaba, they sealed off that door completely. So there is a lot of significance to 2 areas of the Kaaba on that wall that are called Multazim and Mustajar that we shall talk about. There is also an area here to the Kaaba that is called Shadarwan, which we may mention time permitting. Okay. I think that suffices for now in terms of the technical names associated with the Kaaba, and we will come back to this if we need to. I have a few pictures of what the Kaaba looked like long ago. We are now Hijri, 1431 now? I think, 1431. This is what a picture of what Mecca looked like in 1372, which is about, 60 years ago, right? And you can see that there obviously wasn't that much of a crowd, because look at the constraint. There is a fence here that runs around the Kaaba. So you actually had to walk through one of these pathways, and there's various that come in, and then you'd have to enter this sort of arena or circle or fenced area to do the tawaf. And then there's all these buildings and structures, right? I think this building here would have had Maqam Ibrahim, and that building there would have probably been, you know, where you went to get Zamzam. And they had these awnings or, you know, covers jutting out where people could sit and take some shade and rest. And this is like just 60 years ago. And you will see on the video clips I show you how different it now looks in just 60 years. Okay. That's another picture of the Kaaba from, it says 1880. So that's a little older. That's about 130 years old. And again, you can see there was a lot of structures around the Kaaba that are all gone. None of this structure is there, or this there, and so on. Look at Maqam Ibrahim here compared to what you have now, right? There's even some buildings there with domes, which were probably graves or something of significance, but all lost in time. This is a picture of the Kaaba in 1910, just before the First World War. You can see the area around the Kaaba was cobbled rather than marble as it is now. These are again old pictures. This is also an old picture, but it's colored, I guess, to the degree that we could get color 67 years ago. This is 1371, again, so about 60 years. And again, you can see that fenced area, and I'm mentioning this again because I'd like you to sort of remember this and compare it to what you're going to see how it looks like today. Again, some old pictures. This picture I also wanted to share with you because up until the time I had the opportunity to go for Hajj in 2004, actually 2004 this wasn't there, but when I went in 1997, this was still there. And essentially, this is the Kaaba there, you have the Hijr Ismail, and Maqam Ibrahim was already as small as it is now there. But after you did that, if you wanted to drink the Zamzam water, which was a spring that gushed out for Nabi Ismail alayhi salam, you'd have to come this way, and then there was a flight of stairs. You'd go down the flight of stairs down under here, and down under here was where they'd have water from Zamzam, and there was a glass encased area where you could actually see the pump that pumps the water from the well and so on. This is all gone now. It's all marble. It's just one floor. And now they have just some faucets and just places where you can just go and fill some water for yourself. But there isn't anything like this that you could go under or beneath to drink the Zamzam water. We're back at the first picture there. Okay. Let's just take a look at some videos. Most of these videos have the Quran being recited in the background, and because it's wrong to be talking while the Quran is being recited, we've muted the volume here. I'm going to show you a video first just to give you a better idea of the door of the Kaaba and as well the Maqam Ibrahim. These are all very, very recent pictures. Okay, so you have, this is now Mecca as it looks today. And I don't know if you can even spot, Hijr Ismail is there, right, the semicircle. Maqam Ibrahim right there, right? And you have people doing tawaf. The rush is still not too bad as it was this morning. But I'll show you some of that as well. I have another one here of the Kaaba in Maqam Ibrahim. This is more an aerial view, and this is actually the Salat taking place, Fajr prayers, and you can see people standing in concentric circles. This was probably last week or so, and you can see the crowd already building up, but Maqam Ibrahim, you can see it more clearly now because there isn't people around it, right there, that structure there. And in relation to it, that's Hijr Ismail. This side of the Kaaba is where I said there was another door before that has been sealed off. Okay, and this is what the new structure looks like. And for, this is then just the Salat taking place, but I should probably just pause this for a second. In the Shia madhab, you have to perform tawaf on the ground level itself as close as possible to the Kaaba. So we are only permitted to do tawaf around this area as close to Maqam Ibrahim as possible. If the rush is too much, we can keep moving out until where it is possible and safe to do so. For our Sunni brothers and sisters, they are permitted to do tawaf on the different levels. So during Hajj time, you will see people doing tawaf on this ground level here, and then there is a second level there, and then there is a third level there, and then there is the top floor here that looks empty right now, but it's full of people closer to Hajj time. It's certainly worth going up to the top and just watching the people from doing tawaf beneath and just watching the people moving in circles. It's a beautiful sight view. I have a close-up of Maqam Ibrahim that you can see. That's the Maqam Ibrahim, but this is now as if the camera is where the Kaaba is. So it's as if somebody is standing with his back to the Kaaba, facing Maqam Ibrahim, and behind the wall there, behind this wall here, is where Safa and Marwa is taking place. You can see these individuals walking here behind, right? What they're doing is the walk between Safa and Marwa. And these individuals are actually walking this way, anti-clockwise, because the Kaaba is on this side. And I think as the video moves out a bit, you will begin to see the Kaaba as well, I think, closer. Let me just move it out to the end. You can see the wall of the Kaaba. Now, in relation to size, you can see where Maqam Ibrahim is, and this here on the left is the Kaaba. Okay. So I think we have a fair idea now of Maqam Ibrahim. Here is a video showing the Hijr Ismail more clearly. You could see the Hijr Ismail there, the semicircle. It is recommended to pray two rakats there facing the Kaaba, but not during your tawaf. During your tawaf, you're actually going to stay on the outside and not go into this area at all. Okay? This is a relatively empty Masjid al-Haram where there's very, very few people, actually. The kind of crowd you probably get on a hot summer day when it's not a significant time on the Islamic calendar. And in those times, the top floor is normally even locked out, so you won't find people there. Okay. Just a couple more, and then we'll actually move on to the next segment. For those who may be curious about the tawaf on the upper floor, this is an example of a few people doing tawaf on the upper floor. They've already opened this area now for the month of Dhul-Qa'dah. Still, it's very, very empty. You can see there's a lot of empty space here, but there are individuals closer to the edge here, and that's because as people do tawaf on the top floor as well, they like to be gazing down at the Kaaba. And there are also a lot of individuals who are not actually doing tawaf. They're just standing against the railing here, and watching and looking down. And depending on how much time we have during the hadith session, we shall see that some of the riwayat tell us that up in the heavens, where the arsh of Allah is said to be, the throne of God, there is a structure like the Kaaba that is called the Baytul Ma'mur. And the angels do tawaf of that structure there. And so human beings were told to do this in imitation of that. So exactly perpendicular to the Kaaba, up, you'd have the Baytul Ma'mur, and as the angels circumambulate and go around doing the tasbih of Allah and glorifying Him, the human beings do the same thing. So it's a matter of perspective. On one perspective, you might say, well, it's just a structure made up of bricks and cement. Why are people walking around it? What's the purpose? On the other side, if you look at its inner meaning, then it's very, very beautiful. Even to stand up there and watch and look down and just see, almost as if the angels going around the Kaaba, you see the Bani Adam, the children of Adam, going around the house of God. Okay. For those who are soon to go for Hajj, just so you know what you're going to be going for, walking into the kind of rush. This was taken yesterday. Okay, and we're still in Dhul-Qa'dah. So if you get this sort of a crowd, you're lucky. I think you'll get more, not to frighten you, but you really need to be wise and prudent. Not everyone there is well-meaning. There are pickpockets. There are people there who have come for different reasons. And you might get a little zealous, ambitious. I'm going to go touch the Hajar al-Aswad, right? But you could easily take, 40 minutes, an hour, just trying to get from the outer area here down to that circle. And so this was just yesterday. I think I have another one that sort of is taken more at ground level. Let me just see where that is. Yeah, that's right there. Okay, so this is the same thing, just taken more from the ground level. And they actually raise the cloth of the Kaaba a little bit because people are tugging at it, trying to tear it, or just hang on to it or hang off it. But so, you know, and if you watch the people very carefully, you will see they're barely walking. What they're actually doing is just, you know, everybody's pushing the other, and it's just actually moving side to side, side to side, side to side. And while you're doing this, you're supposed to stay focused on why you're there, doing the tasbih of Allah, the tamheed of Allah, the takbir, the tahleel, glorifying Allah, making sure constantly your left shoulder is facing the Kaaba, not turned away, no one's crushing your wife, no one's elbowing you, poking you with an umbrella, or stepping on your toes, still thinking about Allah, right? You're going to see all kinds of things, people talking on the cell phone, people doing all kinds of things during tawaf, right? But there is a lot of spirituality even in this, if we take the time to think about it. Okay, the last thing I want to show here is a clip from Medina, Masjid al-Nabawi. And it's not the inside, actually, unfortunately. It's just the outside, the dome. We've all heard of the Qubbatul Khadra, the green dome under which the Prophet of Islam is buried, and that's the green dome. And this is also a recent video. The mosque has been expanded tremendously. It's a modern structure now, but they've kept the old green dome, which was there, I think, since the time of the Ottomans. So you can immediately tell that that green dome is ancient. It's different from all the other domes and structures. Okay, and there is quite a bit of rush there as well. Unfortunately, I don't have the side from there facing the door to show you where the Bab Jibra'il and other significant parts of the mosque is. But Jannatul Baqi would be on that side, facing the door that enters to the green dome, right across it on the other side. Inshallah, maybe some other time when I have the video clips for that, we'll look at that. Okay. The other thing I wanted to mention before we stop this and come to the next segment, and I'll just take less than 5 minutes for that, is when we go for Umrah, which is out of the Hajj season, any other time of the year, there are certain things that we have to perform that are wajib during the Umrah and the terms that we're going to be talking about. So the first thing you do is somewhere outside Mecca, you put on a special garment that's called the Ihram. For men, this would be like two pieces of white cloth, like two towels, for example, one on the waist and one to cover the upper body. For women, it would be just a simple white dress. And you wear this ihram at a place outside Mecca that is called a miqat. And after you do that, there are 25 things that become haram on you. You become a muhrim because you're wearing the ihram. And that's why these things are haram on you, because you're going to Masjidul Haram. Okay? And then when you get to Mecca, the first thing you do is you do the tawaf of the Kaaba, then you pray two rakats near Maqam Ibrahim, right? Then you go to the place between Safa and Marwa and you walk seven times between the two places. That is called the Sa'i. Sa'i is to walk between these two places. And then you do the taqsir, which is to clip either a bit of your hair or your fingernails, right? And essentially, once you've done this, you have finished your Umrah and you can take off your Ihram. Thereafter, for the remaining period you're in Mecca, you just continue doing Mustahab Tawaf, reciting Quran, praying, and so on. But that would be what your Umrah consists of. When you go for Hajj, you have to do actually two things within the Hajj. So the Hajjatul Islam is made up of two parts, an Umrah and a Hajj. You also have to do the Umrah. And then if it's not yet the 9th of Dhul Hijjah, you can take off your ihram. But on the 9th of Dhul Hijjah, you put on your ihram again in Mecca, and you do another part to it, that is the actual Hajj. Okay? The reason you still have to do the Umrah is because it is forbidden on anyone who doesn't live in Mecca to enter Mecca without the ihram. You cannot enter Mecca unless you're in the state of ihram. Okay? Even if you're going for business or tourism or whatever, for you to enter Mecca, you would have to put on the ihram, do the umrah, and then take off your ihram. Okay? So when you go for Hajj, what you do is you go a little early, as most groups will do. You arrive there with your ihram from the miqat where you put on the ihram. You do the tawaf, the two rakats, the sa'i, the taqsir on your fingernails or whatever you clip, and then your ihram is done, your umrah is done. Then you might have a few days of grace. And then on the 9th of Dhul-Hijjah, you put on your ihram in Mecca and you go out to an open plain that is called Arafat. You spend the 9th of Dhul-Hijjah in Arafat from sunrise or from noontime to sunset. And then after sunset, you go to another place that's called Muzdalifah or Mash'arul Haram. There you pick 70 or enough pebbles for stoning the shaitan. You spend the night at Mash'arul Haram or Muzdalifah, as it is also called. The next day, as the sun rises, you make your way from Muzdalifah to Mina. At Mina, you stone the pillar of the devil, that is called the Jamarat, Rami of Jamarat. You sacrifice an animal. You do taqsir. For women, you cut a little bit of your hair. For men, you shave off your head and then your hair. And then you basically stay in Mina for 3 days. The next day, again, you do the stoning of the devil. The third day, you do that. And then you come back to Mecca. You do another tawaf of Hajj. You pray another two rakat. You do the sa'i between Safa and Marwa. This time it's for the Hajj aspect, not the Umrah. And then you do another tawaf that's called the tawaf on Nisa, which is, again, mandatory in order for your spouse to be lawful to you again. And you pray two rakats again. Right? And that basically essentially brings your Hajj to an end. After that, you can stay a few days. Before you leave, you might do a farewell tawaf once more. But the thing to remember is every time you do a tawaf, you pray two rakats at Maqam Ibrahim. Okay? And whereas the sa'i is only done once for Umrah or for Hajj, there isn't anything like a mustahab sa'i, the tawaf can be mustahab. After you've done your wajib, or what is needed for Umrah or Hajj, you can keep doing more tawafs for your grandparents, for your parents, for your friends, neighbors, anybody who you remember there from the mu'mineen and mu'minat. But every time you do tawaf, you pray two rakat at Maqam Ibrahim. All right? So with that, I'm going to stop here, and we're going to take a minute or two just to move some of this around, and inshallah come to the second part of our lecture. If you can recite aloud, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.